This is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore our humanity.
This podcast will be periodically available on this Sci-Fi Talk feed, but its permanent home is going to be on my premium podcast. Hi, this is a new series. It's called Creativity, where we look at how actors, authors, filmmakers, and special effects technicians get the job done and find the inspiration to do so. And today's first episode is called Performance. Sometimes a certain scene will be a breakthrough for a character. Leonard Nimoy recalls an important scene in the episode The Naked Time. A virus has the crew kind of expressing their inner thoughts. Mr. Spock is contaminated by the virus. There is an important scene where he's trying to keep his sanity in the briefing room. Here's Leonard Nimoy about that scene.
We were in a very fertile period, and the directors were open to ideas, and Bill Shatner and myself and D. Kelly often came up with character touches and character ideas and scene ideas that were helpful. But you're pointing to a very special one for me because it was a scene that was not in the original script. And I asked for that scene to be written. I described it. I said, I think it's a chance to really reveal what Spock's interior life is all about. So they wrote it for me. We staged it very quickly. It was late one day, almost wrap time, and they told me we just have one crack at this and then we have to wrap. So we did it quickly, but it turned out to be quite effective, and shortly after that episode went on the air, the fan mail for Spock just went through the roof.
Yeah.
I think it really touched a chord in audiences' feelings about the Spock character.
Stay tuned for more Sci-Fi Talk with Tony Tolato.
Very rarely on television does an actor get to play a character, really, for different parts of his life, from a young man to a more mature man. That's the case for several actors on the series For All Mankind. Here is Joel Kinnaman, who is Ed Baldwin.
It's just been such a joy, you know, getting to be on this ride that this show is. And you know, now we're three decades into this alternate universe and all the possibilities that it has. And to get to portray a character over three decades, it's really fascinating. I'm absolutely going to butcher this study. I read it in the Times maybe 10 years ago, and it was a study that was done by three U.S. universities, and I completely forgot who they are. But they did it was a 40-year study that they did on personality. What they concluded was that we change so much over 10 years that we basically become a different person every 10 years. And when I think of myself, you know, who I was when I was like 32 and then who I was when I was 22. I mean, it's hard to not agree that you change so much. I mean, of course, we feel similar in some ways. We carry the history of the years that we have experienced, but how we look at the world, how we are, how we respond to people, you know, there are similarities, but there's so much changes over 10 years. So it's so fascinating to get to portray that. And of course, you know, I only do the characterization of it, but the writers, they are the ones that really, yeah, they've done an incredible job writing the show. And I really rank them among the great shows, you know, the great shows that we have seen and how they have portrayed these characters and how they've dared to take these bold, surprising left turns with the characters that I, you know, did not see coming. And I really feel like these surprising turns that these characters have, that's what defines them as people. And it's the same thing as when you meet a person and you get to know them and you kind of categorize them, you categorize them in your mind, like, oh, it's that kind of person. And then you have sort of a shallow perception, but you still feel like you know that person. But then when they do something completely different from your categorization, and you get so surprised, but you also get the sensation like, oh, that's who you are. And the feeling that you And the reason you get that feeling is because you get that whole spectrum of possibility, because they did something that was such a contrast to where you had them pinned down. And I feel like that's what's true in life, and that's what's true in characters, is the great characters are the ones that have that whole range of possibility. And that's why I've been so impressed with Matt and Ben and all the other writers, and how they've surprised me again and again with these character choices.
Sometimes it's hard to focus for an actor and to keep that performance where it is. Jodie Baffer, who plays the president on the television series also For All Mankind, told me about one moment on how she got her character back in focus.
I mean, this is, I may live to regret this. No, I'm teasing. But there was a moment on set early on playing her this season, playing the president. I was really not having a great day, and I was struggling to fully embody President Wilson. You know, like I really needed to make a leap here.
Yeah.
And in between takes, I sort of took myself off to the, we weren't working on the Oval Office that day. We were in Mission Control, and I took myself off to the Oval Office and I sat in that chair, and it did a lot to help me sort of fill her up and feel the things I needed to feel. So
sometimes in a series, you know, or because of the history of the character, how it's all going to end. And you're kind of filling in between. Here is Colin Morgan of Merlin, who obviously it's a story that we all know the ending to. But in his case, he had to fill in the blanks, as I said.
Once we know how this ends, that's something that, you know, I'm always interested to know where your character's going to go. If there's room, if you go, okay, if it ended this season and everything was nicely rounded up in a package, then I go, okay, they're set. That's, you know, producers, BBC, they just wanted to end it there. But if they leave it on a cliffhanger, leave it on more, then that's a conversation I'll have with Johnny June and say, okay, what are your plans? Where do you want to go with this? And if that's an exciting prospect, I always go with a passion of something and a passion of a project. And if that's there, then yeah.
You know, with Merlin, you've already come a long way. It's something I've always also asked Angel, but you've come a long way, and there's still a lot more to go.
Mm.
You know, it's ahead of you. How does it feel just to get to this point, and to also know that there's more for you to do in the future too?
That's what it's all about. I think it was always a growing up tale for Merlin, and you know, being from the boy, and now a whole new chapter's opened up in this season, and as he enters into being the man that he's, that's new prospects for him, because he has gained power, he has gained respect, and still no one really knows who he is.
Actors take roles for a variety of reasons. For The Walking Dead, back in season one, Andrew Lincoln talked about what drew him to the part of Rick Grimes.
I mean, that's one of the great joys of what it attracted me to the part in the first place, is that it's about a man, it's about everybody changing. You can't, by definition of the world that you inhabit, you have to keep changing, otherwise you die. You have to keep adapting to this world, otherwise you die. And I think that it's a brutal world. And so parenting in an apocalypse is, you know, it's not the same way that we would do it. You know, we don't have the iPads, iPods, and, you know, any distractions.
Actors immerse themselves in their roles, and sometimes those roles follow you home. Here's Alice Krieger.
When they say action or just before, that you really do have a foot in both worlds. You are inside that character's shoes. The only time I've actually had difficulty, it's very weird to talk about, was Silent Hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That something, I truly felt as if something had attached itself to me, something very dark. You know, I had no idea that when I said yes to the role, that I would feel as if I had descended into darkness playing her. And I did. All I can say about the experience, the last 2 weeks of my time on the film set was spent in that church burning people. And all the women surrounding me were Canadian, so they went home to their families at night. I went back to the hotel room, and my husband was not with me. He was, had work elsewhere. And when I got home, I had a little dog who used to wait for me. She knew when I was coming, and she'd be at the gate. And Skipper was waiting when they dropped me. And she was wagging. She was a little dog. So when she wagged her, she didn't have a tail. So she would wag her whole body. So the skipper was at the gate doing a full body wag. And I came up to the gate and she looked at me. And she stopped wagging. And she looked at me some more. And she backed away. She would have nothing to do with me. And 3 weeks later, I went away to do another movie. And when I came back, Skipper was at the gate, and it was like, oh, you've come home without Christabella this time.
Wow.
Something, I came home with an energy field that was not my own.
Wow.
That's and amazing. It's never happened to me before, and I hope it never happens again.
Let's break and return with more sci-fi talk.
Voiceover and animation work is a whole new area of acting. Kevin Conroy, who's been the longest actor to voice Batman in the animated series and subsequent movies, talks about finding the voice for Batman when he was first cast.
Actually, the only exposure I had had to Batman, to be honest, was the Adam West series.
Right, right.
Late 60s, I guess.
Yeah.
Early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went into the audition, the producers asked Bruce Timm and Paul Dini asked me what I knew about it. And I said, well, I used to watch the show when I was a kid with Adam West. And they said, oh, no. This is nothing like that. Get that out of your head completely. This is film noir, very dark, tragic story. You know, loses both his parents as a child. He's raised by the butler. He's living a life of torture and alone in the caves and double identity and lives to avenge his parents' death. And I said, well, I come from the stage background and you've just described the story of Hamlet.
Yeah, that's right. Isn't that the truth?
And they said, well, no one's ever said that before. I said, well, look, I'm totally unfamiliar with this, so let me just use my imagination and put myself in that situation. And as I was in the booth, I just, my voice got darker and huskier, and I went to a place where I just, it seemed an appropriate sound for that. Mm-hmm. And as I was coming up with the sound, everyone got really still in the booth, and then everyone started running around. And I thought, well, I've either done something really right or really wrong. I'm either on the nose or I'm awful. Because there was a big reaction in there.
In an audio drama, Overleaper, Thora Birch gets to voice two different versions of the same character. She talks about diving in to this particular project and just using her one instrument, her voice.
It works a lot of different muscles, as you said, because it is just you in a dark booth and you're trying to imagine who you're speaking to, what your environment looks like. And it's not so different, perhaps, from a lot of modern techniques in filming where you have a lot of actors who are kind of just stuck in an all green room and a couple of lights. It's a little bit like that, but there's still a physicality to that you have to bring, especially because the Overleaper has a lot of action and drama thrown in there. So you still have to like feel like you're physically in the space of these characters, but also it's an opportunity to really envision what you would like to envision as being the character's experiences and shape and form your reality in this space and present it to the audience so that they can kind of get a sense of what you're feeling and thinking, what you're seeing. One added advantage I had on working with this one is that a number of actors had already pre-recorded some of their roles. So I was able to listen to examples of their characterization so that I had a feel for what I was, working alongside. In terms of the roles, there's two roles. There's Audrey, and then there's the Overleaper. There's also Audrey as a narrator and the Overleaper as a narrator. So while they're all the same person, it's four different versions of that same person. So that was fun. But also, you know, you had to be kind of quick on your feet and create sort of a workflow structure so that you could differentiate enough, but also keep it congruent.
I always thought that two actors in a scene, it's kind of like a ping pong match. One person hits the ball, the other responds by hitting it back, and there's a rhythm that develops. Paula Lasseroe of The Walking Dead talked to me about her scene partner, Michael James Shaw.
Could not pick a better person. I couldn't imagine a better person to go on this journey with than Michael James Shaw. We are close friends. We make music together. We hang out together. We just love each other dearly. And having someone like that to do tough kind of intimate scenes and tough emotional scenes is just, I really couldn't imagine someone better to go on this journey with. One of the things that connects them is that they disarm each other. Their walls can come down in front of each other, and Princess sees more to Mercer, what's behind the armor, and Mercer sees in Princess what's behind the wild comedic behavior. Like, who is this person? And the truth is, they're both very vulnerable people and very sensitive people. So I think it's really important that we got to show that other side of Mercer and the multidimensional aspect of his character. And I'm glad that I was able to be there and play with him in that scene.
Sometimes you take a role and it's a leap of faith. You don't know if the movie was going to do well. Lynn Collins talked to me about John Carter of Mars and the fact that it was a good movie, it just didn't get the attention that it should have.
Again, you know, playing that, being able to express that archetypal part that's within me, it was, you know, it was a magical experience for me. And unfortunately, because there was infighting between Disney and Pixar and, you know, how they wanted to promote it in America was very different from how they promoted it in Europe and Asia, where it did quite well. It was one of those things where, like, you have to commit and put your entire heart and soul into the work as an actor if you're going to feel good at the end of the day. But then when it's all done, it's like, you know, you have to drop your baby off at the fire station because it's not ours to edit. It's not ours to mix. You know, we have to let go what happens with it. You know, what the critics say is none of my business. You know, who likes it, who doesn't like it is none of my business because my work was already done. And that was a big lesson for me, even though I knew that intellectually, what I've just outlined.
Yeah.
Emotionally, this project really, I had to develop that muscle emotionally. It was just like, okay, I did what I could do and I'm proud of that. And I have to walk away, you know.
Stephen Moyer took a deep dive in playing the vampire on True Blood.
But that first script, when I read that script and, you know, what Alan's writing does, that a few scripts I've ever done that I've ever read are able to do in such a way, is Alan's writing is, you can smell it. You can taste the place that he's talking about. He set up a world which felt so real and yet in this unreal, you know, sci-fi idea, this template for a world using metaphors and, but that feels so true. And then, you know, you have this character and when I read the pilot, I haven't read the books, obviously. And I think Charlene's books are excellent. But when I read that pilot, I was just like, oh my God, I want to immerse myself in this. Who is this guy? Who is this character? You know? And then of course, Charlene's books go into sort of quite a bit of detail about Bill and who he is. And he's complicated because that first person, that first version of him that we meet is not quite true to who he really is. He is an agent and he is playing a game. I think the thing that's slightly different about the TV show to the to the books is that he falls in love. He falls in love with this woman, and that absolutely was not his intention. He was there doing a job for the queen. He falls in love with this girl, and then it's about protecting her and their love. And I thought that whilst also having to make some really difficult decisions along the way, and that humanity, that duality, and as you know, it differs a little bit from what happens in the books. And I know people were unhappy about that. And, but I think that Alan and this writer's room saw a complexity in that duality that they found really interesting, which they gave me to play, which was just, you know, like a dream part. Being able to play somebody who's lived multiple lives anyway, who has had so much experience of things that they've done wrong already, and trying to right and trying to correct and trying not to be that next time, or trying, you know, I think they're really all interesting aspects of what it means to have that longevity as a character. Mm-hmm. I thought it was beautiful stuff. That particular beat isn't in the books, as we know, Deborah's character, right, being turned like that. So that was a surprise when it came along. And then, you know, I got to meet and work with Deborah Ann Wall, who is just fireworks and, you know, just unbelievable, just amazing. Yeah. I mean, I've said this multiple times as well, but she is going to be she'll be somebody who's still working in 30 years, who will be getting rosettes and trophies for a long, 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 long time. She's brilliant. Yeah. So that whole stuff. And also Scott, Scott Winant, who directed episode 10 of season one, and the production design of that theater of cars that they created.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And the scene in which I have to turn her and how emotionally, it was amazing. It was amazing stuff.
Sometimes actors have to play a real life person, such as the case recently for Russell Hornsby as he played Don King.
I think Don King is a force unto himself.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's one of a kind, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, you know, everybody looks at promoters that exist now in the vein of Don King. So anytime that there's a promoter who's willing to be in front of the camera, who's willing to sort of wax poetic a little bit, we're always going to compare him or her to Don King. Mm-hmm. And so Don is, for me, was really based on, I mean, just from what I was able to, how I was able to sort of tap into the character, it's really just based on a level of showmanship and theatricality that he had and that I feel that I have just in, you know, who I am. So you get to tap into different aspects of your personality that a lot of Hollywood hasn't seen from me, you know, but that I think that friends and family know of me very well. He has a very interesting cadence. And I think that there were times where, you know, I got the cadence right, but his vocal quality is very specific. You know, it was very challenging, but it was a lot of fun. I tell you, I mean, it's almost like when you go to set and you get to set, it's almost like plugging into a wall socket. It's just high voltage. You know what I mean? Oh, and yeah. you have to be ready to sort of command that presence, but also that energy that he had to just keep going, just push through and just plow through all the naysayers and all the people questioning him and his ability and everything like that. And so it was like, you just plug into a socket and go high voltage. Let's go.
Sometimes actors like to refer as a gift of a role, and Mark Hamill had that as the Trickster in the television series The Flash.
But what I loved about the Trickster was because he was schizophrenic, every single time you saw him, he was a different character. He couldn't maintain a single character. So like you say, in one character, he's kind of goofy and off the wall. In another character, he's like a scary, grind-your-teeth psychopath. And I never, physically, they were always putting noses and wigs and colored eye contacts.
it was a dream come true for someone that always wanted to be a character actor. And I guess that's why I love animation so much, is because animation fairly defines what a character actor is. If you can disappear and people don't think of you and you lose yourself in the character, there's nothing more sublime than that for an actor, because you don't have to take responsibility for yourself. You're just inhabiting the vehicle of somebody else, and that's the thrill of acting. My brother is a doctor, and you know, I couldn't hack the academics. I could play a doctor. Yeah, but see, he's still considered the success of the family, because science trumps the arts. Let's face it, you know. Dr. Hamill is always going to be better than some weirdo that played the trickster on The Flash. I took my dad to see The Paper Chase, and I'd only been in the business about 5 years. But by that time, I'd done, I don't know, 15 or 16 guest spots. I'd had a television series with Gary Busey and Jack Elam, the Texas Wheelers. It was before Star Wars and before, but the point of it was this. When I was driving home, he's a career naval officer. I said, "How'd you like the movie, Dad?" He goes, "That was really good." And he said, "You know something, son? If you ever thought about going to law school, I would match you dollar for dollar." And I'd been a professional actor for almost 6 years, and I thought, I could level this guy by telling him how much I made last year, but I thought, that's cheap. If you have to say, "You don't know how much I make," you've lost the argument. I just sort of felt badly that he couldn't be more happy that I was doing something that made me happy.
And that is creativity, performance. There'll be other editions of this, as well as other areas of creativity as well. So stay tuned. You'll hear some of it at Sci-Fi Talk. All of the episodes are available on my premium podcast, Sci-Fi Talk Plus. You can enroll and subscribe there at scifitalkplus.supercast.com. You know, there are many ways for actors to get to where they need to go, but the main thing is to get to the desired result, no matter how many detours you take. This is Tony Tolato. Thanks for listening.